Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor for Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Thank you for tuning in. Our guests today are Domenico Tripodi and Amanda Tonsgaard from AIP Management, a Denmark-based investment manager. Domenico is co-head of investments for the firm, while Amanda is head of investor relations. Amanda, Domenico, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Andrew.
So, Amanda, can you give our listeners a brief introduction to your firm?
Absolutely. Our origins are a bit special. So we were founded back in 2012 by PK, which is a large pension plan here in Denmark for the healthcare workers and the nurses. And they wanted to invest in something called renewable energy. Maybe it was not even called that at the time. Since 2012, we've invested $7 billion across 25 assets in Europe and the US. In 2018, we did a management buyout. So our last two funds have been fully independent, and we're currently investing a 4 billion euro fund. In terms of your investments, once they're up and running at capacity, they're going to generate 7 gigawatt and contribute to avoiding around 10 million tons of greenhouse gases and support about 6 million households. That's pretty much the number of households we have in Denmark.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Now, before we jump into it, I'm also interested in hearing a little bit about your backgrounds, both with AIP and before joining the firm. Domenico, why don't you start?
So I've been at AIP for a bit over 8 years, but I spent most of my career in the renewable energy industry. So I worked across the value chain. So I worked for an OEM, for a developer, and in fund management before that. So you can say that my profile is industry focused, quite specialized in the sector.
And Amanda, what is your background?
My background is slightly different. I started out as a lawyer doing M&A, and then I moved into being an investor. But most of my career, I've been in what I call private markets, focused on investor relations, fundraising, which comes up to like 20 plus years by now. And last year, I decided to go to the greener side and joined AIP to head up their investor relations function with a view to help them broaden their investor base.
All right. Well, great. Thank you for that. Now, you mentioned that you're based in Denmark, that you invest across the US and Europe. When did you enter the US market?
We started to look in the US in 2016. I think we looked at a few opportunities for a couple of years before pulling the trigger and decided to do the first investment in 2018. So now it has been 7 years. Fast forward to today, we have a number of investment and soon close to 2.5 billion euros of commitment in the US, an office in New York, a team there, and I'm also responsible for our US ventures from Copenhagen. So it has been quite of an exciting journey until today, and the future will also be exciting.
Well, very much so. You started looking in 2016, you made your first investment in 2018. As a renewables-focused investor, you were entering this market during the first Trump administration. I know that at the moment there's a lot of fear over in Europe and a lot of hesitancy because of the change in administration and potential changes in policy, specifically looking at renewable investment. You're here on the podcast, so I guess you guys aren't leaving the U.S. altogether. Curious to hear what your approach is now under this new administration.
It's a particularly fluid period with lots of moving parts. But if you want to isolate the two macro pieces in here, I think on one side, you have the fundamentals for renewable energy being stronger than ever in the US, especially for solar and battery storage. So the cost of the levelized cost of electricity has dropped. Now you also have a US-based manufacturing supply chain, which has emerged in the last few years. And most importantly, demand is growing. We should not take for granted the US is probably one of the few mature markets that are experiencing already a certain demand growth, and projections are even more bullish on growth. That's one side of the coin, which speaks in favor of generation and renewable energy generation in particular. On the other end, I think it's impossible to ignore that the regulatory and macro landscape might be changing. On one end, you have the IRA, where changes are very possible. We shouldn't ignore that. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen, but changes are very possible. It's very important to focus on tangible projects that have safe harbor equipment, that have a clear sight to execution, while longer-term pipeline while still valuable, are a bit more difficult to assess. The other big elephant in the room is the impact of the potential tariff. It's still unclear what is going to happen and what the impact might be. But I think the overall big question is, if tariffs gets rolled over in a significant fashion, what will be the demand elasticity after power prices will go up? Until today, strong developers and power producers have been able to pass the cost through, or a part of the cost through, to the ultimate off-taker. So there's been a high level of demand elasticity. But I think the big question is that at what point the equation breaks, how much can be absorbed? These are all question marks. I'm sorry, I'm not giving you answers in here. But from our side, what we're focusing on is more the executable part of the pipeline project, that our Safe Harbor equipment is largely purchased, PPA are in place.
So there certainly is that uncertainty that you mentioned. As an investor, I mean, obviously you're looking for these immediate safe harbored projects, but long term, how does that affect your approach?
I think if you look at the structure of the IRA, you still have like 4 years to execute, right? So I think independently if the IRA gets rolled back in the near future, you still have a long way to execute. So I think it's going back to the old times. So I think it's important to focus, as I said before, in investing in developers or projects that are ready to be executed, which does not mean they need to be executed today or tomorrow. I think they can still be executed over the next 3 to 5 years. So from our side, as I said before, it's focusing on what you have clear sight on with an execution over the next 5 years. What happens after that, I think is difficult to forecast, but it looks like going back to the old structure of continuous extension of the IRA, I'm guessing now, but from the IP point of view, is looking at the near-term future, which gives a good runway for this fund investment period.
And Amanda, you're working more directly with LPs, with investors into your firm. How do you sell them on the fact that you're going to continue investing in the U.S. renewable space? Is there hesitancy from your LP base?
It's a good question. If I look at sort of our immediate investor base, we have a very small base, and that's how our origin started out. We're very supportive. And I think the longer term, they still believe the U.S. is a good market. As Domenica said, it's one of the largest markets. It has a huge amount of growth. We've seen a lot of invested capital going in. You're moving a lot more to domestic manufacturing, onshoring. It's a big market, and there's a strong business case and fundamentals that support it. I was in Berlin last week together with thousands of other people from the industry. And obviously, there was a lot of talk about what do we think about the U.S. as investors, as limited partners. And I think there are two camps. I think there are those that are like, let's wait. There's a lot of uncertainty. We just need to sit it out. And then there are those that cautious, I would say, optimism because of the reasons I just gave. Big market, big growth. It's critical for national security, affordability. A lot of job creations are happening as well. And if you look at some of the more, you know, Republican-led states, that's where you've seen a lot of the growth. So I think for those who believe there is a strong business case behind this, there are opportunities if you know where to find them. And when I say know where to find them, that means you have the experience and enough sort of deep expertise to execute on it.
That's exactly the point. I think our hypothesis is that the current uncertainty will create even more market inefficiencies that we will be able to exploit. I think with some people taking a bit more of a cautious approach, it will leave more room for investors like us. And that's what we're already seeing. We're seeing like two big macro effects, the front loading of the execution, and at the same time, some investors putting their feet on the brake, right? So I think these two forces support our investment hypothesis.
Well, that's another thing that's been a bit of a theme. While there is this uncertainty, if you're willing to take a view or to find a position where you think there are strong opportunities, it could be a potential buyer's market. There could be real buying opportunities. I mean, is that something you are seeing?
Indeed. I think now we are very active in the US. I mean, we have a very light pipeline and we are very close to closing actually a couple of deals after one dry year, which sounds a bit paradoxical given the uncertainty. But that's exactly the point. I think you summarize it very well, Andrew. I think the current uncertainty and the capital needs create a buyer's market.
But I think it's also more buyer markets for those who have stable capital and deep pockets. So I think those that are larger will probably benefit from this because there will be M&A opportunities for smaller developers who may not be able to raise the financing given the uncertainty you see today.
Overall, what is the mood in Europe towards investing in energy in the US and investing in specifically renewables, clean energy. Is yours a minority view? Are a lot of European investors saying, I can't make sense of this, I want no part of this, and see you in 4 years, maybe?
I don't think that's the case. I mean, overall, the US is just too big to ignore, right? And some people might scale down a bit what they're going to allocate to the US, but I think fundamentally, the growth will continue. But the focus, to some of the points Domenico mentioned about the current regulation we have, that may shift. But I think the drive to more clean, renewable energy, that's going to continue.
So shifting focus a little bit, your firm is very focused on clean energy, on the future of energy that's low carbon, carbon free. But I'm curious, and this is a question I think we've had for the industry for a long time, how do you balance that with the need to make sure you're maximizing returns for your LP base?
We don't believe that two things contradict each other in the end of the day. We cannot give up on the quest for return. If anything, the returns is the primary point, and the secondary point is to have an impact, a positive impact on our planet. But we cannot put the returns after the impact. It will never work. It will not be a sustainable strategy. In fact, I think generally the energy transition has provided investment opportunities which we believe are not just sustainability driven. I think the energy transition answered the broader energy trilemma of affordability, security, and sustainability. And so I don't think we need to give up on any of these points. I think finally we have a solution in sight. Of course, there are improvements that need to come, and the system needs to be able to integrate renewables. We will talk about this in a second. But I think we have a solution that answers to the full energy trilemma.
I think for us as well, I mean, we have a pre-agreed mandate and strategy, which we've been pursuing since 2012. It's all about decarbonization, could be renewables generation, transmission, storage, and years of decarbonization as well. At the end of the day, it's a big part of our investment strategy to have sustainability to go through it. If you don't think that stacks up, our strategy wouldn't work. Also, our emphasis is to deploy quite large sums of capital in a cost-efficient manner. So we're also in a part of the sort of infrastructure universe where that makes sense.
Well, thank you for that explanation. And that's very interesting. It's something we always kind of keep in our mind when looking at the clean energy investment industry. Now, going back to sector focus, what sectors is your firm looking at? Where are you investing? Where are you targeting, even if you haven't made an investment yet?
We discuss renewable energy generation, which is at the core of what we do, but we look at the broader decarbonization of the energy sector. So beside generation, we look at storage, of course, energy storage, transmission, but we have recently also started to look at the demand side of the business, so the load side. We are investing in electric transport, mainly rolling stocks, electrified rolling stocks. And recently, we have also invested in one of the first green steel manufacturing plant up in northern Sweden. So our strategy starts to be a bit broader in the sense that we cover the full spectrum of the energy transition.
And what about emerging technologies? I think that wind, solar, batteries now, those are getting to the point where you know, they're very well established. But there's a plethora of technologies that are a little bit less stable at this point. Are there any that are interesting to you, either for an imminent investment or in the near to medium term?
Yeah, I think generally the biggest challenge that we have in the industry is to integrate the intermittent renewable generation in a system, right? So it's to make the backbone of the system based on renewable energy. Anything that has to do with the integration, to me, is the focus of the future. So we spoke about storage. It's not necessarily new technology, but it is battery storage. It's a constantly evolving technology and improving. New type of storage are also emerging. They're still immature. We have not done large investment outside lithium-ion batteries, but there will be new technology emerging in the storage space, solid-state batteries, etc. Transmission is a very old technology, but I think is gaining prominence in allowing for a larger grid to allow a higher penetration of renewables. But the big one, which is a bit untapped, is around demand and demand response. And what I mean with that is that the energy system will be inherently more volatile, hence allowing for the demand to scale up and down, also depending on the generation, is the big challenge. So we are currently investing on the load side, making it as flexible as possible. We have discussed our green steel investment. It has some level of flexibility. It's a novel technology. So it's a direct reduction based on hydrogen. So there are novel technology, but I think there are also some old ones that need to be used more than what has been done until today to allow for a better integration of renewables in the system.
It's interesting when you talk about demand response. I think that's definitely a big part of the way that we're going to kind of meet the energy challenge. But it's a little bit less obvious how you make that investable for an infrastructure investor. How do you create infrastructure investments that are at scale with that strategy?
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. And actually, we are studying it and we are creating some business model now. I think you need to, as you correctly point out, individual investments for demand response are relatively small. So our idea is to form a portfolio through energy as a service companies that provide smaller CapEx investment, but through a large portfolio of industrial clients. I think you got it totally right. So we need to start somewhere. So the first investment might be small, but through integration of platform and through scaling up platform, we believe that we can get to the necessary scale of investments. But very good point.
Well, the energy mix is changing, the energy demand mix is changing. And certainly the approach from infrastructure investors is changing too. I think that infrastructure investors across the continents, across the globe, and across the range of types of investors are looking beyond what maybe 5 to 10 years ago when I started covering the sector would have been considered an obvious infrastructure investment. We see that in a lot of ways. You mentioned transmission earlier, and I think that's a really interesting topic. It seems like that's something that's underinvested in the US. A lot of people are talking about it. We always hear no transition without transmission, but not a lot of investors are making big investments. We wrote a story earlier this week about Pattern Energy and some of their massive investments in transmission, but they're kind of few and far between. Is that someplace you as an investor see opportunities?
It's another good point. Unfortunately, the opportunity for private capital are still limited. We have some opportunity in Europe. I think it's a bit more privatized market, especially on the UK side and Ireland, for example. But I mean, I agree with you. The opportunities for private capital are still limited. It must be a sector that needs to grow and needs to attract capital, because you pointed out it's probably the low-hanging fruit to allow a higher penetration of renewables.
And in the energy sector, the major theme in the US, and I think it's similar in Europe, it's all about AI. That's all we've heard for the last year and a half, is how we've had this flat load growth for the last 2 to 3 decades. And the entire energy system has kind of been based around that. And all of a sudden, that's been upended with the demand growth that's going to be needed to power AI. And I think there are, maybe are some nuances and contradictions in there, and you can say yeah, but for a few things, but that does seem to be the overall narrative, that it's been about phasing out, that the effort has been about replacing conventional power with renewable power, and now all of a sudden it's no, we need to dramatically increase our power. So I'm curious, and maybe this is kind of a two-part question, how do renewable investments fit into that? And 10 years from now, 5 years from now, whatever, what is the energy mix going to look like, both in the US and in Europe? I know that's a lot there.
No, but certainly in the US, we see the demand growing already as a function of general economic growth and also data center demand. I think the AI demand is there. We see the demand on the offtake side. There are very different projections in terms of load growth coming from the AI, but all the projections indicate a significant growth. So the span is very large, but there is growth anywhere. And we see the off-takers putting the money where their mouth is. So we see that trend unfolding already today. Renewable energy is already playing a role. AI off-takers are looking for renewable energy PPA. I think they're moving more and more to markets where there is more grid stability as well, to also count on renewable energy. But yeah, renewable energy does play a role. And I think going forward, I think the second question is a bit linked to the end of my first answer, is how does the energy mix of the future looks like? That's a very difficult question. I can tell you what we see today, and subject to more demand response and more transmission and more storage, I think there is still a long way to go in terms of a renewable energy penetration. I think we have not answered in full the last questions about what we call in Europe Dunkelflaute, which is like these periods where you don't have solar and wind, and the short-term storage is not sufficient to fill that gap. So in the foreseeable future, gas will still play a role. We don't have the technology at the moment to cover that last part. So the way I see the energy system is a mix of renewable energy, solar, wind, storage, as I said before, coupled with transmission and demand response and gas. I think there is a bit of nuclear renaissance nowadays. There is lots of discussion around nuclear, but I'm not entirely convinced about the merit of new nuclear. Of course, if there is existing nuclear, I think it has its own merit, but new nuclear, I don't see much merits of new nuclear in the system, given the cost and the inflexibility of that type of generation.
Plus, in some countries, there is a lot of opposition to it in the public as well. Example, in the countries where Domenico and I are from.
That's interesting. I think there has been a mood shift when it comes to nuclear, but it's not going to look like it did in the last generation of nuclear. You might have a few nuclear plants restarting, but the future of nuclear, if there is a resurgence, is going to be these small module reactors. And I think there are going to be issues of siting there. You know, everybody or a lot of people probably think they're a good idea, but not in their own backyard. That'll be interesting to see. And Amanda, when you look at the shifting environment, how does your role change? How does that change how you are working with LPs and how you're working with investors?
I don't think that it changes a lot, to be honest. We have a certain strategy. We've been doing this since, you know, for quite a while. We know what we're good at, and we're going to continue to do that. We're not everything for everyone. So I think it's a question of finding the investors that understand our strategy, want to buy into it, and like what we're delivering. And that's just a dialogue you need to have. We, as I said, we have a small group of very supportive investors. We're meeting with new investors, introducing ourselves, and seeing where there's a good fit with long-term stable returns, the focus on decarbonization and the sustainability angle. And I appreciate, you know, that's one strategy, and there are many others that have different. You mentioned yourself, infrastructure has grown so much. And, you know, I come from the PE world. It goes from super, super core to what is probably much more growth venture. And that's all about the risk return appetite of the investors at the end of the day and how it fits into their portfolio.
And Domenico, did you want to add something about the idea of a nuclear renaissance?
Thanks for the question. I think it was more related to where the US and Europe sit in this potential future energy mix, right? I think the US is in a more privileged position because it can benefit from more abundant and cheaper gas. I think it has the transition and the energy system I described already inside, right? While Europe still needs to answer the question on how to source economic or relatively cheap gas. And if you think about the history already, right, in summer 21, Europe was making a plan for its energy system that rely on renewable energy and gas. Then you know what has happened in 22, therefore putting all our plans upside down. But what I wanted to say is that the US has the opportunity to achieve this low carbon energy system relatively soon.
Well, thank you both. A lot of really interesting insights here. And if people want to learn a little bit more about your firm, where can they go other than hopping on a plane to Denmark?
They're always welcome to come and visit us. Then go to our website, which is aipmanagement.dk.
Well, thank you both again.
Andrew, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Andrew.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player, and please give us a 5-star rating so that others can find our podcast. Until next time, this has been Crossroads.